Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan.
I'd like to welcome Zach Flood, therapist of the Men's Resource Center, back to Revealing Men podcast. He was on quite a while back, Zach. I think it was, you were probably months or maybe a year or so ago when you were with us, talking about parental alienation in specific. But today we're going to talk about the relationship toolbox, and we'll get into that. But Zach has been doing most of his work online therapy and evaluations. Since he lives in Puerto Rico, it's hard for him to get on a boat or fly over and do in person at this point. And so he's an associate evaluator. He works with doing custody and parenting time and parenting fitness, specializing in resist and refuse dynamics, working with coaching alienated parents who have been alienated. So he's doing that work in that arena. Then he's also working with men, doing individual and group counseling. And specifically right now, he's one of the principal therapists for the online domestic abuse group. So we're going to be talking about men and how they look at relationships and how they look at building and fixing things and trying to bring a parallel and helping men understand that marriage and intimacy and being in a relationship is a specialized process and requires unique tools. So you often use this metaphor, Zach. I remember you talking to me about in your group. So say a little bit about that to get us going.
Yeah, we see a lot of guys come in and they talk a lot about the problems they're having in relationships. And the big thing that we see is them trying to, like you said, fix things and do things and always trying to be able to show their work and have something to point to. And so what we talk about is the idea of having a toolbox. And that go-to for a lot of these men, I equate to like having just a hammer in your toolbox. So you're having this one go-to thing. And when you're on a project, when you're building something, if you want to just use that metaphor, a hammer is really useful a lot of the times. There's a lot of times you got a hammer and a nail or pull one out or figure something out using that.
Especially when you're framing a house at that stage.
Exactly.
Right? You're using it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
There's plenty of times that a hammer is wonderful, but a lot of times we see that this proverbial hammer gets used over and over and over again, no matter what is being required of them as men, as partners, as husbands, as friends. And so we talk about the idea of expanding the amount of tools in your toolbox to try to think about not throwing the hammer away, but trying to put some stuff next to it in the toolbox so you can pull out a bunch of different skills. And I feel that resonates with a lot of guys. And I thought it would be a good thing to talk about here because it's just a pretty wide-reaching idea for just intimacy in relationships because they take a lot of work and they take a lot of pliability.
Right,
I see
yeah.
just guys being able to resonate with that.
Yeah, I think of, and again, we see a diverse representation of masculinities in the men that we work with, but there's also that kind of more stereotypical, traditional masculine energy that sometimes we see in our work with men. And so we oftentimes will see men being very interested and very skilled and knowledgeable about what it takes to build and fix things, build a house or fix something in the house. And they're eager and to get a lot of tools. It's like the worst thing for a man who would be interested in that type of thing would be to have a small toolbox. There's something about going to Lowe's or Home Depot and geeking out about maybe a new tool or a different kind of unique tool for a specific type of job. So there's a lot of openness to this notion that in order to be good at building and fixing, you need a wide array of tools and competency and how to use them, when to use them, and the whole problem-solving process of, oh, this one's not working, so let's try this. And trying to take that interest and transfer it into their curiosity about relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you spend time with them and you work through the issues that they're bringing to session and to group, a lot of times their intentions are really good. They mm-hmm. want to help. They want to make things better. It's just the perspective that they take on how to get there can be could use some expanding. And so that's what we do, exploring the idea of broadening the toolbox and putting more of those tools in there. Because a lot of them, it's when they try to fix something, quote unquote, they try to use the hammer, most of the time they're trying to get to a better place. And so it's not like they're using the hammer out of some malicious place. It might have some negative consequences, certainly, but when we really dig deep, it's not because they're trying to cause harm. It's just that's the tool they have and they know how to use the most. And so that's sort of what we're talking about, is allowing them to realize that they can use more than just that hammer or more than just that proverbial go-to tool that they have, and be able to build something really beautiful, which is a really close and intimate relationship. That's obviously what we're all striving for.
So understanding the what you're building is something important, and if you're building and fixing your dream house, you know you're very eager to stay engaged and be part of the stages of the building process. And it's exciting to see development and growth as you move forward. And I think that to take that interest in that desire to build and fix and having that vision and applying it to relationships and seeing that as a worthy pursuit as well.
I think it'd be important to talk about a little bit about what we see with guys when they first come in, when they're first starting this journey, is when they have maybe just one, maybe two tools in the toolbox. When they're in some sort of turbulent or difficult situation, their options are use these tools that I know how to use or not have any tools to use. And the alternative is like scary. It's vulnerability. It's being unequipped, being less than, being incapable of helping. And so when they're given those two options, they choose the hammer. They choose the one that they know how to use. And that's when it gets used in all the wrong places, because they would rather do that than feel vulnerable. Right. And so a lot of what we're talking about is, of course, adding new skills, being able to talk about those, and we'll talk about those in a little bit, but also being able to have them sit with the fact that you're going to feel vulnerable sometimes. You're going to feel ill-equipped. You're going to be presented with things that are scary and things that you can't really control. And so it becomes a conversation about how do you broaden the bandwidth for that feeling, the ability to be able to sit in that space. And that's what a lot of guys have some trouble doing. And so they just turn to that hammer.
Yeah. Hammer or saw or some...
whatever it may be.
Yeah, channel lock pliers or... something is just, you know, you think of those right. tools that are a little more limited, or you have to be aggressive and grab something and push or hit or and that's kind of that metaphor of, you know, that sometimes in a relationship, you know, being assertive, taking charge and leading when someone consents to being led, those are kind of more aggressive, intense kind of tools. And then this, you look at, you know, like what would be comparable to the tool of empathy, or which is a softer kind of energy, and you know, it's a slower, and that would be something, you know, there's tools like that that we use to build, yeah,
like a stud finder or something, where you're trying to inspect and trying to find where to use tools, and listening and inspecting and being able to take information in rather than action. There's a lot of things that you can do when you're trying to figure out where to go next, and being open to exploring the space around you versus manipulating the space around you.
Right. Yeah. Well, so let's take a look at, like when you look at, first you got to get a buy-in with guys. And I think that's part of the work we do is to take things that make sense to them and say, okay, you wouldn't go to a, you know, to build a house with just a hammer and a saw. I mean, would you? No way. So you, and then you help them maybe understand that as, you know, as we evolve as men in a 21st century, you know, what is a fit male as a dad, as a husband, as a partner, as a brother, it requires emotional intelligence, requires relationship skills. No longer can you be just a breadwinner, you know, and put food on the table and clothes on the back and roof over the head. You know, the old school kind of, once you accomplish that, you're good. That's helpful. Women can provide those kinds of resources to families now, not just men. And so like this advanced skill of relationships. And so what are we teaching them? What kinds of models have you used that are effective?
Yeah, the big one is I talk about the concept of emotional intelligence. Okay. And
can you break that down for us?
Like, of course. Okay. So first, before I do that, like to talk to guys about is that emotional intelligence is something that you can work on. And I use the parallel of what you would, you know, in quotes say, regular intelligence is there. Some people you went to school with, they just like rolled out of bed and did calculus too. Some people are just born with the ability to, not me either. but there's people that just can roll out of bed and have really good processing skills or memory, or they're just really intelligent.
Good writers or speakers, but terrible at math or whatever.
Exactly. Right? There's people that have born gifts, but we go to school, we go to class, we learn how to do math. Some people might have a little bit of a head start, but a lot of people still have to go and study and learn these things and practice. And I think of emotional intelligence as the same thing. Some people are born with more of an innate ability to pick up on other people's emotions. Some people have more of an innate ability to be able to communicate properly. But some people are born in households that really emphasize it. Some people work at it. Some people read books about it. And so I think of emotional intelligence as being something that you can really draw parallel to just learning. So it's not something that you're born with it or you're not. And then so you just throw your hands up and say, well, I can't really work on this. I'm just not good at it. And so I try to talk to guys about like, we got to go to school a little bit. We got to learn these things and practice and put them into practice in our life. And so helping them realize that they're just not dealt a hand of cards that they have to play is really helpful before I even like start going into it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that parallel of intelligence. You know, we talk about toolbox and building houses, but then you got another parallel and it's like, there were things that I'm sure for you in school where it came very easy. And then there were, you know, when I'm in my grad school, I was terrible at math and statistics. So I had to be tutored. I mean, I could not pass and do well by just going to class and doing my homework by myself or whatever. And so knowing that as a weakness, but yet still realizing that if I'm going to be a psychologist and I'm going to graduate, I've got to do this. And so for guys too, it's like, maybe you struggle with empathy. Maybe you struggle with, but seeing it as valuable, and it's like, oh, I can go to school. I can call up the Men's Resource Center or some local counseling, and I can learn these skills.
So I this idea came to me to frame it that way when I've had multiple guys say something to the effect of like, why didn't they teach us this in school?
Yeah,
there's a lot like just growing up. It's not everybody, but there is an emphasis on this not being as important. And that's talked about here and there, but it's not emphasized. Like, this is essential. Right. And so a lot of guys just grow up in environments where it's not emphasized. So that's what we're doing here is just sometimes playing a little catch up. And so it just can provide a little hope that it's not all predetermined. And so to speak about what emotional intelligence looks like and how I frame it, there's multiple ways, but in terms of how I approach it in the groups is I think of the four, if you want to call them pillars, four ideas or four concepts that really make up emotional intelligence. The first one is self-management, which is a little more straightforward. It's being able to really, I don't like to say controlling emotions. I like to say regulating emotions. And we talk about that in group. Mm-hmm. It's a little easier because we don't want to control things. We want to be able to use the levers that we have. And so being able to understand how to communicate, be able to how to behave in certain instances, how to get your message across without being hurtful. So being able to understand how to act in certain situations to be able to regulate yourself is what I mean by self-management. Then I want to think about a self-awareness. So really having an understanding of what makes you tick. Where are your weaknesses? Where are your strengths? How do you ingest certain information or certain stimuli? How do you do in certain environments? Are you more of an engineer? Are you more of an artist? You know, being able to understand who you are and having a real good in-depth look at yourself to be able to know what that is rather than just guess or just be on autopilot. So that's
like
a big one.
Developing an identity, kind of like a self-concept, like who am I and what's my basic value system and the essence of who I am, kind of a thing.
Yeah, and really, in the context of the groups that we're working on, it's really talking about like where are your trigger points, where are the things that really bug you, where are the things that you need to work on, what are your weaknesses is another thing too. Is like, I would say the identity would be more of a long term self awareness about who I want to be, what are my values, versus like a self awareness of like what are the parts of me that I gotta work on or pay attention to right now, and being able to know how that can be dynamic as you go through life.
Does that include working on men's sense of their masculine identity and being able maybe to expand that? Because if they have an older, more traditional view of what it means to be a man, then part of the work is expanding that idea of what is a male identity, what is manhood.
Yeah, I think I also use the idea of autopilot a lot. Is so much of our life, our brains are wired to not have to think about every little thing we do. We have schemas. We have these ways that our brains take shortcuts because otherwise we'd be paralyzed. Right. If you think about every single little muscle, every little thing that you have to do to put your shoes on and tie them, if you had to actually think about every single one of those things, you could not get out of bed in the morning. And so our brains are wired to be able to take shortcuts. And so if we let that process take over, our shortcuts get really entrenched. And so the self-awareness is about breaking that down and being able to pay attention as you go so that you know what's actually happening instead of just skipping from step 3 to step 10 and like, oh, well, here's where we are. I recognize this, so I'll just go here, versus like, no, actually, let's take a step 3, 4, 5, 6 and actually take a deep breath and being able to be aware of what's going on.
Would you put self-awareness like body awareness in terms of, or maybe that's a different pillar. I'm not sure what pillars you're working with here, but I'll learn. But just in terms of understanding emotions and kind of where they show up in my body, is that under that category?
I would say it's just really, it's really paying attention. It's like another way that I would put it is being able to pay attention to yourself, being able to understand what's going on with you. And those can be in the short term, some flags like, hey, this is important. Like, hey, I've got for me, like I tell the guys, if I'm stressed, I can feel it in my throat. Like my chin, I clench my chin. I feel my throat like tighten up in my breath. Some guys are more in their gut. Some guys feel like the top of their head. They feel really tingly. So it's everyone's different. But I know that if I start swallowing a lot and I've got tenseness in my throat, I know that something's going on. And so then I will start like asking myself questions and be like, hey, what's underneath that? What's digging at me here? Right. And so that's just slowing down instead of just going through it and dealing with the tightness. You just sort of take a step. And so, you got to be able to understand those clues that your bodies give you.
Sure.
So your body gives you. Yep.
Okay.
Being able to build all of that to be able to slow down enough to pay attention. So
then the awareness is then connected to the regulation part that you were speaking to earlier. It's like I think, again, another metaphor I use with men, again, kind of men that are more the typical masculinity, is like they understand engines, how engines work. And it's kind of like, it's like you can't, rev the RPMs up into the red and beyond, because that is poor regulation for the engine and what's going to happen, or you think of the temperature of the engine and it needs coolant in order to run at a certain temperature. If it gets too hot, you blow the gasket in your rings, and then you got, a problem with the major. So guys understand, again, kind of awareness through paying attention to your meters and your lights on your dashboard, and just this inherent understanding that you got to be aware and regulated for the engine to work for you, or you're going to end up on the side of the road.
Totally. And I think one thing I didn't say earlier is I try to emphasize that all these pillars and these ideas are all interconnected. They're definitely not siloed, where they're all going to play into each other, and having all of them attended to and worked on as the rising tide is going to float all boats there, rise all boats. So,
Yeah.
So the next idea we talk about is social awareness, which is probably what people would say is the most obvious one, which is being able to read other people and or empathy, compassion, all these things, of being able to connect with someone else's experience. If you notice someone's body language, feeling a little down, being able to pick up on that and ask the right questions and being able just to really notice stuff. So that's probably the most straightforward one, but that's the one that sometimes can be the hardest, is really being able to pick up on cues. And again, it goes to the paying attention thing, where you're not an autopilot and you're actually aware and you're present in the room that you're in and you're with the people that you're with and you're dialed in and you're being able to actually pay attention. And trying to use your own experience to connect to their experience and use that empathy to try to put yourself in their shoes can be really helpful to try to bridge that gap. So a
kind of a masculine, maybe more traditional manifestation of that awareness, as you think about it in sports. I mean, you played, you know, your primary sport was football, mine was baseball. But it's kind of like, in order to be a good competitor, you know, like you're on the line, right? You're gonna, you know, to know the body movements. It's like, what is this guy tilting to the left? Is, you know, it's like everything is sort of such precision. You know, the pitcher is going to be pitching. Is a, you know, the person is going to be stealing a base. Is he leaning? I mean, you're paying attention for the purpose of, you know, winning and having the competitive edge. And again, seeing relationships not in a form of competition, but it's like, if I'm paying attention to my partner, maybe I'm picking up that she's sad or he's sad. Or, you know, you seem stressed and then you notice that and then you identify that. It's a form of empathy, awareness.
Mm. Yeah. You're out to golf with your buddies and all of a sudden the guy that's usually pretty chipper and is talking a lot, it's just a little quieter. Like, well, hey, what's going on, man? I wonder why that is. I just noticed that that you're just not your normal self. You know, just notice what's that all about, and being able to notice that rather than you know, he'll come around at hole four. You know, we'll figure it out. You know, like just sort of going on autopilot, just not even worrying about it, is just picking up on those things. And so, yeah, just being able to notice those little cues and being able to pay attention enough to notice them is a big one. Final one is relationship awareness or relational awareness. And the metaphor or example I use, I guess a better way of putting it, is that every relationship that you have in your life is going to be different. And so I, like what I tell the guys, is like, if you're at the grocery store and someone's, you know, bagging your groceries or helping you out or, you know, telling you where it's on aisle 7, you know, that person in your life, you can of course be courteous and ask them how they're doing, but are you really going to like unload all of your life's problems on this person and like say, hey, I need help with all of this innate, you know, turmoil in my life. And, you know, here's something happened when I was 7. They're kind of be like, you know, I don't know if I'm your guy, you know? So
yeah,
it's about,
it's poor social intelligence, like TMI.
Right.
It's like, too,
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So understanding the people in your life and what roles they can play for you, and understanding, like, being able to understand who's got the bandwidth to be able to help you, versus who you might be overloading. And understanding the people that you can go to, the people that are willing to be that spot for you, and not painting with a really broad brush, and understand the different roles that people have in your life. Because sometimes I get something to the effect of like, well, a lot of the people I talk to are at work, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, should I be unloading all my personal problems at work? And I'm like, well, fair question. You know, it's depending on the person, depending on what kind of role they have in your life. Is it appropriate for the workplace? I don't really have all the answers all the time, you know, because it's every person and every situation is different. But the fact that you're asking questions about that and not just going randomly into the world and just figuring it out, that's what we're talking about with the relationship awareness, is being able to understand like, hey, your partner is there for you and they really want to listen. Or maybe today they don't have the bandwidth for it. Maybe they had a really bad day. And if you're going to unload on them when they're having a really rough day, that's going to be inconsiderate. You know, versus like you being entitled to be able to unload on them, you know, and whatever. So it's just being able to have that lever to be able to push and pull on, just being able to read whether or not that space that you're about to use is there for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we talk we not to geek out about the Johari window, but if people can, you know, Google it.
I'll geek out. Let's go, man.
J-O-H-A-R-I, you know, it's like not everybody is going to be super close, and it's having the intelligence to know, you know, this is a person that's my competitor in business, or I'm being cross-examined. I'm on the stand, and this opposing attorney is attacking me. And so that's a whole different kind of relationship. And you're not working on being intimate and vulnerable. You want to be able to have your arguments well defined and be invulnerable, impermeable, so you can argue to the judge, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, because I get a lot of guys that give me something to the effect of like, well, here are all the examples, all these places that I can't be vulnerable.
Right.
Like, and I'm like, yep, okay, sounds good. Well, let's identify those, but then let's keep going and identify the ones that we can be vulnerable in, and then being able to talk about the differences and be able to actually be able to vocalize that. And like, what does that mean? What does that feel like to you?
Right.
Versus just saying, well, because they're pretty good at being able to identify all the places they can't be vulnerable. That one, we're usually pretty.
Right. And then having the justifications and rationalizations for why. And it's like, of course, we are right on board with you on that.
And so it's about like being able to understand the depth of that skill and being able to really round that out to be able to identify the other side of like, okay, here are all the safe places that I have that I can really use when I need to use them.
And I love how Brene Brown kind of put on the kind of on our radar this reframing courage. That it takes a lot of courage in a relationship to be vulnerable, to open up and share yourself, share your insecurities, your fears, your shame, your struggles. And again, you got to use your judgment about who you're going to do that with. You don't want to do that with someone you know who's guaranteed to hurt you and shame you, but you want to have relationships, hopefully, where you can have the courage to open up. And then manage the emotions that come. And like you talked about the interconnectedness, you're going to expose yourself, be aware of things, and then you have to regulate how they respond to you. You might feel nervous and you got to regulate all that. So it's can be complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to add some layers to this, there's the ability to be vulnerable. There's that, the courage to go forth and share things and talk about the things that are deep within us, to be able to use emotional language. I tell people sometimes, like guys are in group, and I say, you're giving me the play-by-play. You're giving me the Jim Nantz. I want the Tony Romo. I want the color commentary. I don't want the play-by-play. I understand, like, it doesn't really matter what time you got home from work,
right?
You know, before the argument. It could have been at 2, it could have been at 5. I don't need that. I want to know what it was like when you were like really emotionally fraught and when you were scared. Mm. And I want to talk about that. I don't need to know all the play-by-play. And so I get a lot of guys that do a lot of storytelling, give me a lot of the structure, which is good. And I'm not trying to, you know, shut them up or anything, but I'm like, okay, cool. Like you see what you just did there. You tell me what you're going to do about it. You tell me all the structure around it, but I want to know the emotional underpinning of it. I want the color commentary.
Right.
I want all that underneath. And then I can take another whack at it. And it usually goes a lot better. And then, so there's that part of it is being able to go forth, but the other part of it is being able to receive all this stuff from people and to be able to listen. And that's sort of what we're talking about when it comes to having the other tools in the tool bag is I can usually get guys to see the benefit of being able to go forth and do these things. Cause at least the being vulnerable and all that is doing something, which is good. I mean, it needs to be done and it's part of it. But the tricky part is when I try to get guys to realize they got to do nothing. And so that's another layer to this, is being able to sit back and listen and be able to receive and be able to understand what someone else is going through and versus trying to fix it, to bring it full circle, sort of to the toolbox analogy that we're using is a lot of times we want to use the tools in our toolbox. We want to be able to like to do stuff and be able to show progress and be like, hey, look, I helped. Hey, look, I did this for you. You know?
So doing nothing, I mean, in terms of taking us back to that metaphor, I mean, I would say that, you know, that notion of doing nothing is involved in like building or fixing things too, because there's times you run into impasses or struggles, things aren't working the way you thought they should have, and You can keep forcing something, you know, and making, and then things get broke or you get hurt or whatever. But there's a time to stop, to pause, ponder, just sit there and scratch your head and study. That's part of building too, doing nothing.
Yeah. And another word for doing nothing is to sit with it. I get a lot of guys that, resonate with that idea when we're in group, and some of the older guys that, you know, older in terms of been in the group longer, will say that to guys is they'll have a really long story. That's really complicated thing that went down. I'm trying to do this. We're trying to figure this out. And this happened. And then the guys are just like, hey, have you tried just sitting with it? You know, and they're like, no, that sounds awful. And so we're like, yeah, it is awful.
Right.
It doesn't feel good, but it's sometimes what's necessary. If this house is about to fall over that you're building and you're not sure what to do about it, like, you might need to just sit there and think for a little bit and be like, hey, what's my next step? Otherwise, you're just hitting something just to hit something, just to say that you did something, you know? And so that's what we're talking about, is being able to leave space for somebody and be able to be warm. And just to be able to hold space for another person. This person is feeling all these things, and all they need from you is warmth. They don't need you to fix it.
Right.
They just need you to hold them, you know, or just be, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
And then shut up. They just say, like, hey, I'm here. And then just be there, you know. And that's a really hard thing for men to do when they're used to using tools and they're used to doing stuff. And so just being able to work through that with them, because it is really hard for them to see that new way of doing things sometimes, because it's just against a lot of that autopilot that they've been using most of their life. And so, yeah, it's a tough place to explore, but it usually is pretty rewarding when they're able to find that space and be able to use it.
Right. Yeah. I know that you and I, you know, share podcasts with each other and things. And there was this author, I think, that wrote this book, Super Communicators, and you were sharing his three aspects of communicating: the practical, emotional, and social. And so I oftentimes think, you know, with guys, sometimes they want to move too quickly into the practical conversations and, you know, and pragmatics and the X's and O's, as you talked about. But sometimes the emotional, which for them can be like a foreign language, it's like, just, you know, just start there. It's like, you seem like you're sad, you seem upset, you seem stressed, or tell me more about that. I mean, that's kind of moving into the emotional realm and working on that, and then perhaps transitioning at some point into the practical, pragmatic side, rather than just starting there. Let me fix your problems so you don't have to feel anymore.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then some people are just like, maybe the person's already figured out what they're going to do. They've already done that. They've had the practical conversation with themselves, and they just need you for the emotional side. And then they're just like, no, I'm good. Thanks. But I was coming to you because I'm really sad, or I'm really scared about what I'm going to be doing here in a little bit. Got that figured out. So we see a little bit of that too. And yeah, so it's about understanding what kind of conversation you want to have, and being able to have multiple options there, but also understanding what kind of conversation your partner wants to have, and being able to read that and not just assuming it's going to be the practical conversation where it's just going to be facts and figures and what do we do about it.
Right.
And being able to read that, being able to understand who, that's sort of that social awareness that we were talking about, is being able to understand what kind of relation or what kind of conversation that person wants to have. So, yeah.
Right. So it's interesting that I went for a walk this morning, and there was a neighbor of mine who's having their house kind of remodeled and stuff. And I saw the work trailer out in front. And I'm like, God, Home Specialist. I've never seen that company. And so then I looked at it closely. I think I sent you a picture of it.
You did.
And I just thought, oh my gosh, it says Home Specialist. And so here's your subtitle: Building Quality Relationships. And I'm like, holy.
Which is great. Yeah.
Kyle, this has gone full circle. It's like, you know, it's like now it's like this ethos that we're dealing with, or the zeitgeist of the, you know, of the moment, the spirit of the moment, is that, you know, relationship skills in this kind of information economy, kind of connection economy, that yeah, these business people have figured it out, and which a lot of guys in my groups and your groups figure it out too. It's like these relationship skills creates good business, not only in marriages and relationships, but even in being able to be a person who goes to a house and say, I'm going to be walking in your house for the next 6 months, in and out, going to see you in the morning with a coffee. Your kids are going to be coming running off to school. And I want to have more than just the ability to craft a new room for you. I want to have a relationship with you. So it's both energies of this masculine energy and what we would consider historically as feminine energy of relationship skills. But these guys are putting it on their what is it, the tool crib, shall we say, as their mantra. And I'm like, that's brilliant. Maybe
that's really cool.
For me, I want to hire them because it's like I want to see how good the relationship skills are.
You're their like target audience, so that makes sense.
Probably.
Well, I would say that like another thing to think about, if you want to think about it pragmatically, is that if that person trusts you and that person cares about you and that person sees you as a safe person to work on your house, they're probably going to refer you to their friends and you're probably going to get more business. Like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so, like, being able to have that skill. And then also, when you're done talking to that person, you can go be a really awesome builder and like really use your hands and be a wonderful craftsman.
Right?
You have to do both. Exactly.
Yeah. Only good at relationship skills and you went in and you totally screwed up and botched the kitchen. They're going to be like, okay, that's like the waiter or the server that comes in and they make a great impression. And you're like, this server's great. And then you're like, where in the hell's my food?
Yeah, exactly. So as we said at the beginning of this metaphor, it's not about throwing away the hammer. It's not about getting rid of that, because there's plenty of times where we got to fix stuff. We got to like figure out, where do we go next? We got a problem solve. Like, those are wonderful, beautiful skills. It's just about when they're used, when people don't want them to be used, or when they're just not a right fit. That's when there's that friction and there's that emptiness and disconnection. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, I want to just thank you, Zach, for the work you do with the men, and you know, they can reach out to you and connect in some of your groups and the mencenter.org. Website and coaching and whatnot. So I appreciate you taking the time to come in today and talking with me and our listeners about relationship toolbox and how we can learn those skills and learn how to use them and how they can really enrich our lives.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's hard work, but it's rewarding work for these guys. And if you're resonating with what was talked about today, reach out and we can start that journey.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Zach.
Mm-hmm. See ya.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating so others can find us. Be well and have a great day.